twice before you go. Baby, this will be the end. Think twice before you go.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. That's Sandy Williams music, blues.
Blues.
I never knew, man, you're a blues guy.
Yeah.
Would have never guessed.
Well, Calvin's the last song, Calvin, you got to play one bourbon, one scotch, and one beer. That's, that's John Lee Hooker's most famous.
Well, it's Tuesday. That means Tuesday with my co-host, Sandy Williams. If you're just joining us, we're talking about, you know, why young people are not very happy with the nation right now. And both Democrats and Republicans are going to pay the price if they don't address the fact that young people aren't you and I, Sandy.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because, you know, Gary was speaking from his experience and his vantage point, and that's... As people always do.
Right.
And I think what's missing and what's important is that we hear from the young people who speak from their own vantage point and their own experience.
Well, and that's exactly what this is. Here's a young man. These comments that younger people don't work hard or take pride in their work is ridiculous. Government bent policy to favor boomers since they became the largest voting bloc, and they still do. Example, the Higher Education Act of 1965, the GI Bill, etc. Let's go to the phone lines and let's go to Malik from Racine. Hey, good morning to you, Malik. It's always good to hear from you, man. You say what?
Hey, good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. No, I was just going to comment, you know, Julie and Gary, you know, one of the things is I grew up in Oak Creek, and we, you know, we were fortunate, my family, to buy a house right before the market crash in Oak Creek. Within the last year, I know that, you know, from my own family experience, we were able to sell our house for almost, you know, 2.5 times from what we originally had purchased it for. So I know, like, Julie's generation, they benefited a lot from that, where unfortunately a lot of our incomes, even, you know, down the line, like my cousin, he just graduated as a PA. He makes a very strong 6-figure income, but after taxes and paying off a mortgage, he just purchased a house in Franklin. He barely, like, he's looking to, you know, get a second job. And then just kind of going into what Gary was saying with regards to the capitalistic country that we live in, unfortunately, I don't feel like that's the case. You know, it's actually not the case, because a lot of times the government, it does interfere in business. There is, you know, obviously monopoly laws, which are beneficial, but then there's also times where the government decides, you know, TikTok needs to sell because we just don't like the person. I know that there's statutes and, you know, every city has different rules and stuff. But like as a restaurant owner, I have to, you know, file with the city and say, hey, these are my hours. And they limit and they, you know, decide on what I can and can't do in my place of business. So unfortunately, it's not a true capitalistic government. And kind of like what the last person was saying is that last generation, they had a lot more impact. And we're seeing a lot of the results in the, you know, the downside of all their all of their policies and their involvements in foreign policy and such. And that just goes back to, you know, with how much student loans there are and the incomes that are not going up. Inflation is going up. I know even just with meat prices, produce at my restaurant, we see a large, you know, increase in prices, but people's incomes are not matching that. So it's difficult to stay in business. It's difficult to get work. There's a lot of challenges that we face, but I think that's one thing that I do agree with Julie is that, you know, these hard times, we're going to make those decisions and we're going to try to make the best out of the situation. But I think that's part of what needs to happen is kind of like taking a step back from the older generation and just allowing the newer generation to take new positions and have a little bit more of a voice and such.
Hey, Malik, very well said, man. Hey, reach out to me. I know it's been a while, man. Reach out to me again. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to... David from Mequon. Good morning to you, David. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. Really quickly, I would say this. One thing that's kind of overlooked, I think I've mentioned to you guys before, my father is in hospice, and you know, Medicare does not pay for long-term care, does not pay for hearing aids, does nothing for eyesight, does nothing for dental. So the problem is when you get to be a certain age, obviously there's a lot of things that can go wrong with you. But when you get into an assisted living facility, There's absolutely, the only way you get help is until you go broke. And when I say that, Medicare does not pay for a single dime of that whatsoever. And unfortunately, what I think people don't realize is, yes, it costs a lot of money to live nowadays for a variety of reasons. Part of it is technology. You look at cars today, the reason why they're much higher price, look at all the electronics in it. Look at all the safety features, obviously, that have been added since, the last 40, 50 years. It's not cheap. And unfortunately, with technology, and you see what happened in California with the minimum wage, what do the large companies do? They immediately laid off tens of thousands of people. They're being replaced with kiosks and AI, artificial intelligence.
Well, no, David, that's been
quickly.
David, that's been predicted. That hasn't happened yet. They haven't laid off tens of thousands yet. There's just a prediction that some of these are going to move in the direction of kiosks and self-service.
So, Sandy, I guess what I would say to you is this. So when it went from $16 to $20, that expedited the process of going to artificial intelligence and automation much more quickly. So now the people that were supposed to benefit are not benefiting because they're out of a job.
Well,
they don't even have a chance to get on the ladder.
Yeah, I don't think we want to get into a debate, but the problem with minimum wage is that if you extrapolate, if a $16 wage is something that's being earned by a college student while they're going to school, that's one thing. If a $16 wage is being earned by one of two wage earners in a family, and the family is trying to make it by having two minimum wage earners, which is a pretty common phenomenon in the world today, then what we end up seeing is that people are getting paid unlivable wages, and it's really putting everybody behind the eight ball. And that's one of the things that's happened in our economy. Like I've said, it used to be one wage earner could get you to the middle class. Today it takes two. And one of the problems is that the wage structure has declined in America for the single wage earner. I think that one of the things, Dave, you're talking about is the insufficiency of Medicare with respect to what it can provide. And I think what you're tacitly saying is that there does need to be government programs for the elderly, and that the elderly are in a bad spot, particularly when they get very sick and at near end of life. And, there is a place for government in this process.
So it can't be both ways. Okay. You can't say, that the government can't afford and then turn around and say they're not providing. Let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. Thank you very much for the call. Your thoughts.
Thanks for taking my call. What a great morning of phone calls. From all your listeners. I loved every word that Gary and Julie and the other callers, Malik, David. That's what we need is participation. We can figure all this stuff out. But to get to the my point, our young people are very, very smart. They're very aware. And quite frankly, if I were younger person, if I had to witness the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war and all of these, my classmates in my era, my generation of young people being shipped off to war when it was pretty much and has been pretty much proven that the Middle East conflict was very synonymous with Vietnam as far as we didn't have to do this. We didn't have to be there. But no, what did we do for throughout the W administration, throughout the Obama administration, and then into the Trump administration? We're still in war. No matter if your brothers and sisters or classmates, if they've had to serve three or four, five tours, no, the public did not come to their defense. So if you're a young person watching the illegal wars of the Middle East and your classmates being fodder for the whole political broken system that we're in, how much faith would you have? At the same time, then we're denying climate change. They've been taught in saying that the end was inevitable. You know, we have Armageddon coming. You know, Mother Nature is just going to puke all over all of us. And what did we do? Nothing. So what you're seeing, in my mind, is frustration from a young group of people that have been asked for so much and ridiculed so much to where they're spinning around in circles. They don't know who to trust and who to believe. So, you know, the first step, I think, is having great conversations with Julie and Gary and Malik and David and everybody else. And you and I, we the people, as we are reminded, we are the government. We're supposed to take control of this thing, and we're supposed to have the backs of our young people, and especially when they're going to war. But we didn't. So, you know, that's what you get when you do things half-assed.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond to...
Well, I think it's an. I think this dialogue is something that's really interesting to pursue, and I think we all try to project what young people are thinking, and then the young people have their own thoughts. But I think it's important that we all do try to project, and we all do try to put ourselves into the shoes of the next generations, and that we start looking at our policies and our politicians and who we elect through the eyes of young people. And you know, we can worry about fiscal austerity and the national debt, but we also have to worry about the policies and the expenses that are borne by young Tom, Dick, and Mary. And, you know, today we were hoping to get to talk about Biden and the reasons for voting for Biden and to try and analyze that and get call-ins about it. We might not be able to finish that process today.
Yeah, because we've got a guest coming in. But Sandy, I will say this. The young people and Mike from Kenosha hit it on the head. They're not worried that China's coming after us. They're not worried that Russia's coming after us. That's our generation that keeps fearing that the boogeyman is coming.
Well, like, you know, we talked about it last week or the week before, but the duck and cover generation of the baby boomers developed a whole psychosis about being invaded and the dangers of the world that maybe the young people don't share.
844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday.
I'm going to tell you a story. About the house rent boogie. Long time ago, I stayed with old woman one for 5 long years. I had a good job. I mean, a sure enough good job. I worked there every day. 5 long years.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Sandy, for people who are wondering, what is that?
What? Why? Yeah, well, John Lee Hooker. He's a guy that was a favorite a performer of a young friend of mine who I think of often. And so I thought we'd play him today.
Yeah. It's great music. No question about it.
Yeah.
So we want to welcome back to the studio, Mr. Tom Content. And Tom, what is your title?
Yeah. Hi, good to be back. Yeah. I'm executive director at the Citizens Utility Board, Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin. So the customer advocate for all the utility customers across the state.
And so if you're just joining us again, it's Tuesday. Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and this is right down his alley. Let's talk a little bit about why you're back today, Tom.
Well, last couple of Fridays when I was back when I was in the news business, they used to talk about, there should always be a reporter ready late Friday afternoon, because that's when
when news breaks.
The news breaks, yeah. And sometimes it's
it's the stuff they want to sneak through,
stuff,
right?
The stuff that they don't want to see it get a lot of, in the limelight. So anyway, a couple of Fridays ago, We Energies announced a big natural gas proposal, which is going to cost over about $1.2 billion for a new power plant. And then the next Friday, they announced the rate increase for 2025 and 2026. And so customers just saw an increase, a double-digit increase over the last 2 years, and now we're looking at another 15% request for the next 2 years.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, Tom, that $1.3 billion gas plant at Oak Creek is to replace a gas plant that was built, and you're in my close memory, it was finished in this century.
Well, that's to replace the older
portion of it?
The older coal plant that's shutting down this year and next.
But don't they have retirement plans for that newer plant as well?
They want to convert that to natural gas as well. What had been originally going to be a giant complex of coal is now is envisioned to be a giant complex of natural gas.
So just in terms of something that was touted to be the future was, I think, one of the last major coal plants built in the United States. And if when it was proposed, they had told us that it would have a lifespan of 25 years or something, it wouldn't have looked like a very good process.
Well, that's the thing. These things are supposed to be built for a much longer period of time. And at the time that the proposal was in front of the state, advocates, including S.C. Johnson of Wisconsin, Clean Wisconsin, and our group, CUB, were advocating for natural gas at the time. And now the utilities come around, and this is the fuel of choice now. But it wasn't the fuel of choice back when they were proposing this. And so we have a big concern about how much customers are going to be saddled with costs for shifting decisions and how much costs utilities should keep profiting after coal plants shut down, and that's an issue that's actually in the rate case proposal in front of us right now.
And this rate case, the increase is what, 15% that they proposed?
15%. They're saying as much as $17 for a typical customer, $17 or $18 for a typical customer over the next 2 years. That's 10 or 11 for $20 for 2025, and then 17 or 18. So over $200 a year by the time this is fully implemented, if the PSC goes along with the full request. As you might recall from these rate case processes, you know, the initial filing is like the opening bid. Utilities don't get everything they want when they submit an opening bid, when you're negotiating for a car, you don't get your everything.
Well,
you
one want. Of the reasons they don't get everything they want is because they have to negotiate with someone like you and CUB. I mean, the public needs to be active in the process, or it's a one-sided negotiation, and the opening bid might be something much closer to what happens.
So let me ask you, because they talk about, well, we've got the maintenance of cutting down all these trees that are interfering with our wiring, and so we've had to do that, and so that's an added cost to us, and we're going to pass that on to you, the citizens. To me, that's a part of doing business. The fact that you have to trim the trees, why should we have to pay?
Well, I think the question ought to be, why weren't they trimming the trees all along rather than having to do it in a burst? And I think that's one of the problems. The way rate cases work, the rates get approved based on a forecasted set of costs, including maintenance for things like tree trimming. And maybe a utility, when things get tight and they want to make sure they earn their profit, they might scale back on the rate at which they incur the costs that are somewhat discretionary, like tree trimming, right?
So exactly. And I think that's where there are going to be some, as the watchdog group, we're going to have questions about that and other issues in the case and the Public Service Commission's auditors will be asking that questions as well. It's like, were you budgeting poorly in the last rate case? Are you not paying the folks who trim the trees enough? To make them want to stay and get the job done, lots of questions about the sudden increase, and we're cognizant of the fact that this utility just took an earnings hit or a revenue hit from the Illinois regulator, the Illinois Commerce Commission, just delivered a setback to this company in terms of the rate case they had down there for their natural gas utility. And what did they come back? They told Wall Street that they were going to redirect some of their investments that they didn't get in Illinois to other jurisdictions, which means right here, back in Wisconsin, is one of the key areas where they're going to look to fill that gap. So we're going to be in this case, and we're going to be asking a lot of questions. And one of the issues we're concerned about is that even in this case, they're asking to increase their profit, their return on equity back to 10%, and their profits have been, if you think about the scales of justice in the utility world, the scales of justice is the shareholders and the customers, and we just think there needs to be a little more balance. The shareholders of this company have done very, very well, and whereas we did an analysis that looked out over 20 years, and the shareholders in returns have more than quintupled. And our rates have more than doubled, and they've gone up faster than inflation over that 20-year period.
Well, and I think over that 20-year period, the ranking of the rates paid by Wisconsin customers have depreciated as compared to some of the other states. So whereas we used to have some of the very cheapest rates in the Midwest, I think now we're much closer to the top than we are to the bottom.
We are. We're actually second highest in the Midwest now, only to Michigan, and it's not the claim to fame we were looking for, but we're top 15 nationally, number 13th, lucky 13th. I'm glad you were playing the blues this morning, because some of this talk can be a little bit down, but we're there to try to moderate this.
The fact is that, I guess we're
all right.
We'll be back to talk more about this.
All right. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Tom Conton. And what's the name of the group that you're with?
Yeah, Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin.
And Sandy Williams, along with John Lee Hooker, on the Earl Ingram Show. Anything that I can do. Like you did just now.
Got dog. Move it.
Yeah, you're listening to the right station. welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us that saying, Sandy, I like his stuff, man.
Yeah. I like I say, it's good stuff. And it was from what a lot has been derived, right? The blues, yeah. The original blues.
John Lee Hooker on the Earl Ingram and Sandy Williams show this morning. Sandy was in a melancholy kind of way, I guess.
Well, I don't think it's melancholy exactly.
Well, blues is his blues. Well, let's move on from that. Yeah. We got so much stuff to talk about. But we are joined by Mr. John Conton.
Tom Conton.
And he is here with the
Citizens Utility Board.
Citizens Utility Board. Sandy, have something you wanted to talk about?
Well, I just think that the public, electricity has become much more of something. Electricity and gas and the cost of it has become a much bigger part of people's budgets, I think, than it was 40 and 50 years ago. It has to do a little bit with the fact that our population base hasn't been increasing as much. So when the utility bears increased costs, it gets spread over a smaller number, not a growing number of customers, but a static or even shrinking number of customers, which causes the rate increases to be borne that are higher. In fact, I started practicing law in 1970 and participated in the mid-70s in the very first rate increase cases that these utilities had since about 1952. So we went through a 20-year period in this state and in this region with no rate increases. And subsequent to that time, after inflation kind of took hold and then changes in technology, et cetera, we've had rate cases that are about annual or biannual. So
yeah, now we have a regular cadence of rate cases coming at us. And but what you bring up is an issue that we are diving into as a state and at CUB, which is a household energy burden. And you think about, you know, we're reading today about rising rents and the ability to afford our homes. But if you look at household energy burden is kind of the measure of how much of your income goes towards your utility bills. And, you know, at CUB's urging, the PSC has started to require all the big utilities, including We Energies, to submit analysis every year about the state of energy burden in their communities. And we're hoping that they're going to take action based on that, because the more you measure something, you want to manage it and improve on it.
Yeah.
And I think what we've seen already is We Energies has launched a forgiveness program for people who are struggling to pay their bills. But you know, there needs to be more in the way of and in terms of helping people who are really struggling. And part of that is shoring up the housing stock to make it more energy efficient. And we're going to have two big programs that focus on energy. The statewide energy efficiency program is going to roll out later this year. There's going to be $150 million in federal money that's going to come to Wisconsin in the form of energy efficiency incentives for things like insulation, basic things like insulation, other things like heat pumps or heat pump water heaters, as well as solar. So a lot of incentives are coming.
What process is there to incent the landlord? Yeah. Let's say someone owns a housing stock in the city of Milwaukee, and they aren't taking care to have it insulated, and the tenant pays the bill for the utility. So the landlord doesn't see the problem of the lack of weatherization for that building. How do we incent that landlord to make that change?
That's a big question. That's the nut of one of the big issues that everyone is trying to grapple with, is how do you, the disconnect between the landlords and interest in upgrading their properties to make them more comfortable to live in, but also more efficient.
I mean, housing codes could play a role in that.
Right.
I presume that would be local housing codes that would have to be enforced. But obviously, there is a problem in this regard,
right,
because it is the poor who live in some of the poorest housing, and some of that poorest housing has the least weatherization, so they have big bills. And I was mentioning off the air, but you know, we had this blessing, which was the moratorium to make sure that people don't get their heat turned off during the cold months. But the curse of that is that if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you aren't going to pay that bill during the winter months during the moratorium. And now you face a big bill in the spring when the moratorium drops. And I know that has become a big problem.
That's an issue. And there, during COVID, Congress actually enabled more energy assistance dollars to flow out to customers, but those have now stopped. So there's still energy assistance dollars available, and we encourage anybody who's struggling to go on heat.wi.gov to really get yourself on energy assistance if you need it.
So I do think a lesson with respect to this conversation is that for our listeners is that these problems are local and state and are going to be solved. I mean, there could be federal solutions that would come down, but the primary place that this is going to get solved is localities with respect to building codes and the enforcement of building codes, and at the state level with the Public Service Commission and the policies that are implemented with respect to electricity rates and payments and required forgiveness programs.
You know, so I remember as a young man starting out, I rented a upper flat and really pretty old house, and I didn't think of gas and all those things. And I remember after I finished that winter, the gas bill might have been $2,500, and I'm going back to the early 80s, late 70s, and I had a $2,500 bill because of the house that I was in. It was, you know, it had a duplex, but it had a tall attic, I guess, and
sure, but
and
I mean,
old, and the windows, and I never will forget when I got that bill. I almost couldn't believe it, and it took forever to try to, you know, to get to a point where I could pare that thing down. They weren't giving breaks then.
Right.
And don't forget, there was a time when there was separation of the electric company and the gas company.
Right, right.
And people could function even if you cut off one or the other. But once they came together, you basically, people become homeless. If your gas or and electric are both cut off, you're actually, people are actually homeless. You can't cook. There's no lights. You know, there's no heat. And that's how serious this issue really is.
No, it's, I mean, this is
families.
It is. It's a life and death issue.
Right.
And that's why I want to make sure that that when it comes to the deciding the size of these rate increases, that regulators have affordability at the top of their mind, and not just thinking about, oh, we got, you know, that and not just thinking too much about the giving the utilities everything they're looking for.
I think
one thing about the housing stock is, you know, when a home isn't well insulated, or if it's got leaky. Broken windows or windows that aren't well insulated. It's like dollar bills flowing out into the air.
Well, one thing that does encourage me is that if the utilities are required to put out affordability reports with respect to the service, the financial community will look at that too, because financial communities wouldn't like it if a utility's rates are chewing up a large part of their customers' incomes. Because that'll create a lot of resistance, political resistance in the communities, and it'll make that utility less sustainable from the standpoint of its financial performance.
No, and that's so true. And some of the investment analysts ask questions like that on their earnings calls.
Sure.
Like, how much are we cutting too close to the quick from the point of view of the customer's ability to pay?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, in fact, another show maybe we'll talk about homelessness, because yesterday the Supreme Court was taking up, our U.S. Supreme Court was taking up the issue of what kind of power should localities have to make sure that people don't encamp with tents or otherwise try to live outside in their cities. And we do have a homeless problem in the country. And part of this homeless problem is just, as you said, it has to do with utilities.
So let me ask you, you guys, because people may say, well, what are you talking about? It's only $200 over an entire year. But when year after year after year, they continue to increase, it becomes a burden, right? If it was a one-time $200 increase, and then we didn't have to worry about it the next year or the year after that, but it's every year there's additional increases.
Well, that's the thing, and that's why we took that long view to say, look at the rate, what have rates have done, how bills have gone up over time, and then just if you look just from the most recent case and this case together, so between November of 2022 and January of 2026, so just about four years. You're looking at, if they get everything they want in this case, you're looking at about a 30% increase for residential. That's just a lot. A lot to bear.
And the problem here is the architecture of the economy. Like I've said, you know, the costs that are being borne by families, and particularly families who live at or below the median income, everyone is living paycheck to paycheck in that environment because of not only the cost of housing, but their cost of health care and the other things, the way the burden, there's been this burden shifting to households. And part of that burden shifting has been this increased expense for energy.
Well, here's a text. PJ, too many greedy landlords who don't take investments seriously, rather they live off other people's money. Is that the issue, or is it the utility itself?
Well, I think that you've got multiple issues going on with landlord challenges in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, but we just think there needs to be more balance in favor of the customer when the utility rates are set.
I mean, the landlords would achieve a benefit if their housing stock is improved through insulation, but the problem is that if, to the extent that it requires incremental expenditures, and to the extent that they are still able to sustain their rents without making those incremental expenditures, they don't have the incentive to make the expenditures. And that is a problem. And I do believe that building codes are going to have to be part of the solution, because there has to be some coercion as well as incentive.
But there are programs in place that the PSC has funded, actually, that are helping shore up the housing stock in Milwaukee through some other nonprofits and some contractors are working to, they go into these homes and the R value is almost negative of the insulation. It's one or something, and it should be 40 or 50, right? So it's starting to happen, but it's happening. It's not happening fast enough. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, but building codes, Sandy, and people enforce codes, and it's not like there are going to be enough inspectors to go around to deal with the multitude of homes and buildings that need to be inspected. Is it safe to say that?
Well, there hasn't been, let's put it that way. But I think that it makes a huge difference. If you're living in a home that is essentially uninsulated and you bring it up to current best case kind of insulation, you can reduce bills by a significant percentage. I suspect 30 or 35%.
And that's the thing. If people don't understand the value of just living in a comfortable home saves you money, right? I mean, it's that people don't understand how energy is just flowing out the window, through the walls, if the walls aren't good, or through the attic, or it's really dramatic. It's dramatic.
All right, 844-967-2789, Tom Content, Wisconsin
Citizens
Utility Board, and Sandy Williams. Hang on the phone lines. 844-967-2789 is the number.
Down on Auburn Street. Not Blue Butchie, she went to Atlanta, Georgia. Down on Auburn Avenue.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday's with my co-host, Sandy Weirs, and Sandy just goes too fast. We're joined by Tom Cotton. He is with the Citizens Utility Board. Let's go to the phone lines. And Bob, good morning to you, Bob. You say what?
Well, good morning, Earl, Sandy, and Tom. I had installed on my home 9 solar panels. And I've mentioned this to you before. And they're activated on December 28th, 2022. And I really haven't gotten any respect at all from We Energies. I haven't gotten any incentive from them. And thought I'd bring it up and let Tom react to it.
Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. No, certainly there are the tax credits are the big incentive, are an incentive, and the fact that the solar prices have come down, but the utilities have really discovered the benefits of solar and how that benefits themselves in the way that they want to build these large solar farms around the state. But there still are some roadblocks when it comes to customers owning their own panels. Sometimes it's the interconnection rules. Sometimes it's just getting the process of getting it hooked up. We hope that that's on its way to being improved. But that's a real issue. And we think customers should be able to lease their panels and not just have to pay up front for the whole cost of them. But we've had a bills in the legislature that haven't been able to move the needle on that one. The utilities have a pretty strong lobby against that one.
Well, you know, that if you make your own electricity, who doesn't have to make it, right? So that it's sort of a simple formula there. And utilities have dug in their heels about people generating their own electricity, because it cuts into, and you know, if you look down the road through the other end of the telescope, the utilities worry about whether or not they'll actually need to be these big central power plants in the future, in a future in which there is lots of solar owned by other folks around the terrain. So this is a long-term problem. There will always be some pushback, I think, from the major utilities.
Yeah, and it's all about setting the incentives right. I mean, I think there are states around the country that are recalibrating how they regulate utilities
right.
to actually encourage more rooftop solar, or to encourage a bigger focus on affordability and focus on the customer. And the utilities that in those states are actually getting rewarded for doing the things that customers want and need.
Right. I mean, the problem with utility regulation dates way back, and the nature of it also dates way back. So currently in Wisconsin, utilities really only get rewarded for the assets they build and the assets they own. So transmission lines, power plants, that's how they actually earn their profit.
Right.
And so they're incented to want to build big power plants, and they're also incented to try and make sure that their customers don't generate their own electricity. And that's because we've set up this system the way we have, and I'm sure it can be rethought with other incentives and other methods for reward.
All right, Jack from Merrimack, quickly.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to point out, and I just got in this discussion. It seems that every time there's an increase in the price of oil, utilities and transportation companies, they all demand a surcharge or an increase in their rates. Funny thing, price of oil goes down, the rates don't drop.
Well, actually, Jack, with respect to the way fuel costs work for utilities, that isn't true. There is a dead space, dead band around the fuel forecast, but when the fuel costs go below or above that dead band, the price to the customer does change up and down.
No, and that's true. And even with the price of coal, there's actually been an adder to the price of coal that Wisconsinites pay when the diesel prices are high because of the trains, the surcharges that the railroads put on to get the coal from there to here. But when the coal, so that's been an unfortunate aspect of making coal less cost effective.
Yeah. But the fact is that, yeah, the customer is the one who bears all the risk associated with that fuel cost up and up, going up. And unfortunately, they've gone up more often than they've gone down.
Jack, are you there? Okay.
Yes.
You want to respond?
I've never noticed that the price that the basic cost of utilities has gone down. Certainly. We're still getting hit with transportation costs almost every time I go on some kind of public transportation, airplanes, buses. Yep. There's a fuel surcharge, and the price of oil goes up and down, but when it goes down, I've never seen that surcharge go down, and frankly, I've never noticed that utility costs have gone down either.
Hey, Jack, thank you very much for the call. I wish I had more time. Tom, you want to, Tom, there's something you wanted to.
I just wanted to mention, just because one of the ways that people can, we want people to get involved in these cases and file public comments when the time is right. But another way to fight to help manage your own costs is to reduce your own costs. And one of the things that's happening this month through the State Focus on Energy program is an Earth Month discounts on smart thermostats. And smart thermostats, if you install them, can actually save you on your energy bills. And so Focus on Energy, if people go on the Focus on Energy website, there are normally these smart thermostats can cost $90 to up to $150. And right now they're available for as low as $15 or $25. So you spend a little, but you save a lot. So we're really encouraging people. It's this promotion that they're doing is tied to Earth Day and Earth Month, and it ends on April 29th. So I wanted people to be aware of that.
And actually, to the extent that tenants could do this, they could
save money. The installation?
Yeah, they could save money as well, to the extent that they have a thermostat in their rented dwelling.
Yep.
Today we had hoped to talk about Biden and to focus on that. We sort of overlooked this hour. So I think this Friday, Earl, we want to focus
on... No question.
Yeah.
All right. So thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Tom, as always. It's always great
thank
having
you.
You. And Sandy, you know, kudos. Up next, Jane Mattner, Mattner on Air, and Greg Bach. Get out and enjoy the 70-degree weather, Calvin. It's going to be 35 the day after. All right, see you later.
And by that time, for the 1:45, the last call for alcohol. I said, hey, Mr. Bartender, what do you want? One.